Hello, welcome to a fine episode of the Tombstone Podcast, where we talk about video games, video game industry, and whatever the hell we want to talk about. My name's Devin.
I'm Kevin.
My name's Dominic.
And Zach.
Shit.
What?
I don't know. That was just a lot of loud noises.
I heard like
I threw something and the cats went fucking wild.
I heard was just like... Shit.
Yeah, so I forgot how to do an intro. We're going to go round robin of stuff we've been excited for, been playing. We'll start with Kevin.
All right. So I finally got my hands on Jedi Fallen Order. It's not Dark Souls. Everyone stop it. It's not Dark Souls. It's a lot more like Sekiro, if anything, which is also not like Dark Souls. But, yeah, it's also got some Metroid Prime elements in there. It's very... It more than a lot of games, is fun to explore. Because, like, you'll have these little... Like, it has this neat aesthetic, like, that Star Wars unique aesthetic, where it's, like, all this crazy advanced technology, but, like, overgrown with vegetation in a cave and stuff. So it has that very unique sort of aesthetic to it. And then you kind of walk around with like your lightsaber, like lighting up the path. And it's got a cool feel to exploration. So like, that's my favorite thing about it.
I feel like Star Wars has always had a weird sort of polish to it, where it all feels like kind of loosely thrown together, because in the 70s, it was totally like future based on the past situation. So it's like, you know, we're just going to get a bunch of like rods and bells and whistles that look like a generator or something like that. But I like that aesthetic as well, for sure. And it feels organic. You know what I mean? Like,
It feels very good, because it's like it's future technology, but like because of like spacefaring and shit, like a lot of it gets abandoned, or a lot of people are using like hand-me-downs. So there's places where things are just kind of makeshift, like ramshackled together, and then there are places where it's just completely abandoned, and it used to be this crazy like big technology thing, and now it's overgrown and taken back by nature. And so there's like all these neat little places you can check out. And so to me, like that feel of like walking around, because I more in this game than most other games, I find myself walking. Like in any other game, I'm just running. In this game, I walk slowly and like take it in. I'm like, oh yeah. And the music helps. It's got like that classic Star Wars sort of like flutes and orchestral music and shit. So I like the musical flourishes as well. So I've really been enjoying the game. There are some things I don't like about it, but you know, I'm still forming a full opinion on it.
Yeah. I mean, John Williams was pretty fucking amazing at what he's doing, you know, like, the particular space theme was like a couple other things did it really well, like Back to the Future and shit like that, but like Star Wars was very, very unique musically. So
All right, Dominic, what you got for us?
I've been sort of doing the same old this week. A little bit of I did start Fallen Order as well, and I actually haven't I didn't finish the tutorial part, because as soon as I got to like what I assumed to be the end of the tutorial part, I had to like go and do stuff, so I turned it off and did something else. But I'm actually more excited to go back, and I really want to play Detroit Become Human again. I never did finish it, and I was always interested in that story and that whole narrative. And before the main episode, we started talking about like androids and robots, specifically that you can fuck, but that was a different conversation.
That's beside the point.
The fact that we have androids is like cool and interesting in its own right. The fact that they can fuck is just kind of like
it's weird. It's for I both did not expect it to start there, and I also totally expected androids to start there. You know what I mean? Like,
it's like they gotta have androids so we can have sex with them.
But I mean, look, there's like two or three things that really kind of push humans forward along, and that's killing and fucking. And like, if we can kill people in a better fashion, we're gonna figure it out. If we can fuck people in a better fashion, we're gonna figure it out. Like,
yeah,
I mean, that's basically all humans are. It's just killing, fucking, and that's it.
I it's just funny because, you know, the whole idea of androids, you know, being integrated in our society, like kind of like how Detroit Become Human took it in their own direction, which I loved. But like seeing it in real life is interesting. Seeing it in real life beginning as a medium of like fucking them, not exactly not exactly where I thought we were going to start. But the fact that we did start there, it is what it is. I'm not going to buy one because, you know, that's a fucking expensive anyway, but you know how it goes. If there's a robot out there that does everything for you, optionally, basically, like if you turn Google Assistant or like Alexa into an Android that you could potentially fuck, maybe, but like other than that,
they're gonna be like grandfathered into having like fucking capabilities. It's like, well, we already like programmed.
We've already done it.
It's already there.
It's already here.
We already got it. Might as well leave it in as an option.
It blows me away. Why did we start there?
It's already the backbone of the code, so
we should have, all that we needed to do was make Alexa into a physical animatronic, or Google Home into a physical animatronic, or Siri, right? Like that, and that would have been it. That would have been perfect. But no, we had to start with, firstly, a robot you can fuck, and then what's going to come after that is like what it's supposed to do, which is like redevelop your home and, you know, control all these different things and make ease of access and ease of accessibility in life easier. Like, that's what robots
first,
are for.
First, you have to make them fuckable, and then you have to give them a personality.
Yeah, you like, gotta go with the thing that gets you the money first.
That's just
because that's what keeps you there, you know? Like that fling of just, like, we're fucking, and then the personality keeps you there.
it's honestly, to me, not our proudest moment as a society, but I also, you know, it's here. It is what it is. I both expected it and didn't expect it. Yeah. So maybe I'll play Detroit Become Human. Let's move on.
And maybe I'll want to fuck one of those characters in there. I want to fuck an AI. All right, Zach, what you got for us? Is it more Android stuff?
It is not.
Oh, thank God. Sad. All right, let's move on.
I've been playing a lot of Pokemon.
Uh-huh.
I finished first step of my living decks. So I got one of every Pokemon, every evolution.
So wait, that's just step one?
Jesus
Christ.
Step two is get all the alternate forms.
Oh, yeah, all the markings and shit.
Well, alright, so do y'all know about Alcremie?
No.
What did you just call me?
Oh, Alcremie. Yeah.
Alcremie is the, I guess, ice cream Pokemon. Well, you can give it a berry and then spin in a circle and it evolves. There are 63 different forms for that.
Zach, you're going to have to run that by me again. I missed that. Wait, you... I'm sorry. You what? What do you do?
So its first evolution is just cream. You give it a berry and you spin in a circle and it evolves.
Okay.
You spin
as a character in a circle.
No. You have to spin the switch. So you have to stand up.
No.
And physically spin yourself.
This is next level.
But yeah, there's 63 different versions. So that's
this is why they had to cut all those Pokemon.
This is why they couldn't have the national decks.
Pokemon.
They had to put the fucking.
Oh my God.
Yeah, the ice cream Pokemon took up about 20 gigs already. So
we gotta cut all this. That is a lot of information. No wonder why the blower fan was going nuts.
All right, what else you got, Zach? You got ice cream Pokemon, and
I mean that's about it. That's like the biggest thing I gotta work on now.
That sounds like a fucking blast.
That's step two. Step one is get all the Pokemon. Step two is specifically the ice cream maker.
Step one is finished. But also, the way to get the berries is on a daily rotation. Ooh. And it's random.
So 63 days if you get perfect.
You can get up to two a day. So
That's like a month.
A month, like a month on the low end.
Oh my god.
You could get unlucky.
Yeah, yeah, on the low end.
You could get unlucky. That is insane. I mean,
oh my god, yeah. I don't think I want to play Pokemon.
Well, I mean, you don't have to do that. You could just do what I do and just fucking play through it and go, all right, cool, I'm good.
Honestly, and then set it down and forget about it and be like, you know what? I actually just want to go back to Gen 1.
Yeah. And then
like I always do.
Yep. And you randomize it. Devin, what about you, mate? You're still in your hiatus, right?
Yeah, I'm still in my hiatus, but I have been playing idle games, of course, still. and I've also, last night, I finished watching all of the God of War 4 cutscenes.
Oh.
It was like 5 hours of content. Dude, I just sat here and watched it.
That's a big game.
Because I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, it's like, it's such an interesting story. And I was just like, I love Norse mythology. And just kind of see like the take that they have on Norse and how they were able to kind of like spin it, and like it just makes me so excited to see what they're gonna do, continuing that story. It's so cool. Like it seems like they're gonna try to really try to incorporate a bunch of different religions because Tyr is kind of like Odin's rival in this mythology, and that like Odin and all of like the Aesir are kind of like bad people. They're not really that good of people. And Tyr, of course, in regular mythology, he's like the god of like righteousness and justice. And in this one, he's still kind of like the god of like righteousness and justice and knowledge and you know, sharing knowledge, sharing wealth, sharing power with other people. And so like he's traveled the world and like he's met the Chinese gods, the Egyptian gods, the Greek gods. Like, he's met all these different gods, and he learns from them and is trying to, like, basically kind of try to unify everyone. And, you know, it's like, hey, we can have peace. We don't have to just sit here and fight and kill each other all the time. It's just, I don't know, it's really interesting, and I'm hoping that they continue that and start dragging in more mythologies, because it's really fucking cool.
Well, yeah, and that's what blew me away, because I've always been interested. Firstly, of course, you know, you and I share that Norse mythology sort of fix. But also, you know, I love the idea of blending different mythologies and different ideals and religions together and stuff like that. And the way that they did that take in God of War, and to confirm, to clarify, after playing through all of it, absolutely amazing game, amazing cinematics, amazing story. Playing it and watching it, which is why I love that experience. And we'll probably get into that a little bit once we talk about our main thing. But that was just something interesting to me as well, for sure.
Yeah, y'all are making it sound like the prequel to Smite.
Yeah, right.
To Smite.
That's how it brings it all together.
I almost. But I do like how he calls Atreus son. That like the fucking last scene of the fucking of the game.
Oh yeah,
everyone, he calls him son finally, and it's just like
instead of
boy,
you have a
boy. Atreus,
boy.
All right. So that kind of, I guess, leads us into our topic for the day, which is Thanksgiving is the airing of this tomorrow. So we're going to kind of go through and like, what are we thankful for in, when it comes to like video games and I guess what they've given us in our lives. And I think I'll go ahead and start that by saying I'm really thankful for a lot of the stories that I have been able to enjoy through the medium of video games. I think it's a really unique way to tell stories. I know that it's a little bit more accepted now, but video games as art is something that, I mean, back when video games started, they were just strictly entertainment, and they're whatever, you know, playing Mario is just, it's entertainment. But nowadays, video games as art is, you can, I mean, you have stuff like Death Stranding, which is basically a fucking movie with some walking in it. And then you have games like God of War 4 that it just tell this beautiful story of a father who has a past that he's trying to keep hidden from his son, and the son kind of learning who he actually is, and them like kind of growing and doing things together. It's a really good story, and of course you have other worlds like Elder Scrolls that I've gotten plenty of hours in. That Fallout universe, I've fallen in love with that. One of my favorite universes, Star Wars, of course. And you know, playing the Knights of the Old Republic games and being able to just sit there and have multiple different playthroughs, playing evil, playing good, and you know, saving this person, not saving this person, and seeing how all that plays out, and all the different things that happen. Like I have games that I've never played before that I can tell you the story for, and I will go on the wiki and just read the fucking wiki for, because I'm so much more interested in the story that the game offers than the gameplay that it offers. I don't know. I just really, that's something that I'm really thankful for, is that there's a lot of things that I'm, there's just a lot of good stories in games, and I'm really thankful for that. I don't know.
Yeah, we're starting to get to the point where games are being held in a similar regard to movies, you know, where it's like you can have emotions and like actual character arcs and emotional investment and stuff. And, you know, we're getting there. We're not there yet, but I'm liking the movement toward it, because it's like, like you said, it's like I care more about the story than the game. And it's like, you know, some are more about the game than the story, some are more about the story than the game. We need to get to the point where both of those are harmonious, but we're getting there. And that's what I like to see.
Well, I think that we're pretty close, right?
We're getting close.
Yeah. And you know, I'll talk about Death Stranding for just a minute, because, you know, I do see that there is, you know, it is an extreme cinematic experience. I don't agree with that it's basically like a movie that you're playing. It has some of those elements, but I think it's more so, besides that, just a testament of the fact that, you know, video games are very, very strong forms of art, and they're strong forms of real experiences that people have, you know. And especially in modern, you know, in modern media and stuff like that, a lot of people say like, oh well, you know, video games used to be considered like the loser thing to do, right? Like people were like, oh well, you just sit inside and play video games all day, and it's like, and you don't learn anything and you don't do anything. But the paradigm shifted like a decade ago, more than that, where video games became, they grew from, oh well, it's just something mindless as a form of like brain masturbation entertainment, and it's now like an extreme art form, and it's now a place where people learn more about life experiences from some video games than through their experiences outside of them. And I think that's pretty incredible as well.
Yeah, like it's one of the things I always say is games are, you know, even more suitable to talk to you as a human being, because you have to interact with it. You're not just being fed information and like learn a life lesson. It's you act out something and go, oh shit, I just realized something, not only about like the world but myself, because I made these decisions, and now I can reflect on what I actively did, not what this character on the screen actively did. And absolutely, you know, I love going home, and I mean this sarcastically, I love going home and explaining to my dad, where he's just like, I don't understand how y'all can play video games all the time. I'm like, well, one, I don't do it all the time. I do it maybe a few hours at a time.
Yeah.
And it's really no different than you sitting down and watching the same ass TV show every fucking day. Like, to me, it's like, no, like, it's, I'm not going to say it's better or worse, but it's at least on par with what you do every afternoon. Well, yeah, so it's like,
it's a different experience. And it was, oh man, I lost my thought. It was cool too. But yeah, I totally agree with that. It's like, you know, it's not just something that we just do anymore just to pass time. In some cases, yeah, sure, you know, that's why like casual games exist. That's why idle games exist in some cases. Going back to the whole thing about the Telltale games, that the indie game episode, one of my most favorite trends in video games today, and it's not just indie, this is in a lot of very, very powerful AAA games too, it's stuff that teaches you true to heart life lessons. And it's, oh, I remember what I was going to say. I appreciate that there are some games now that are more like literary experiences, where in literature, you read a story, you dissect the story and all of its elements, and you learn and you pick out your own stylized and based on your own character, themes and messages and feelings and things like that. And I love games that make different people feel different things when they play them. That's the whole point of an artistic, literary, or cinematic, or just video game experience, is so that you can feel your feelings and learn from what it is that you're experiencing in video games. And that, I agree with you, Devin, that's probably where it's at for me in that single player experience. But there's a couple other things as well, but that's pretty huge as well.
All right. What you got, Kevin? What's your first thing you're thankful for?
Well, the first thing when I was sitting down and thinking about what I was thankful for, the first thing that popped into my head was, and this is a bit more, you know, concrete than your thing you were happy about, but it was, I was happy about the Nintendo Switch, but then I thought about it and I was like, well, I'm really happy about this like Nintendo revolution that we're having, you know, where it's like we had, you know, we had the Wii era where it was just trying to be super, super broadly appealing. And then the Wii U era where it really wasn't working out and, you know, not in a hell of a lot of incredible things were coming out. And then they were like, fuck it, back to basics. Let's figure this out. You know, what is Zelda? It's this. We're making it like that. What is Mario? It's this. We're making it like that. You know, what is this? We're going to make it like that. You know, and it all kind of started when they were like, we got to figure this shit out. And I've been really enjoying kind of the revolution of, you know, like Nintendo, like kind of coming up to date and being like, hey, you know, Zelda could be an open world. Let's fucking be an open world and just show all these fucking whippersnappers how it's done. You know, like I was really happy to see those sort of revolutions happen. And I'm happy about like what's to come, because literally the only console that I have that's worth having is the Nintendo Switch. So it's like, all of that, like the past couple of years of that has been really nice for me.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have talked about before the Switch, you know, and in some cases around the time of the Wii as well, because the Wii was pretty smashing, I think. The Wii U, not so much, but a lot of the general opinion was that, you know, if you wanted it for hardcore gamers, or, you know, for a more enjoyable experience, you would probably want to play something on the Xbox or the Xbox 360 or the Xbox One or the PlayStation 2, 3, or 4. And Nintendo was sort of like the family console where, you know, you have a couple of those cool exclusives, but, you know, it just doesn't, it never, to a lot of people, it didn't just add up, or it didn't come up to par with Microsoft or Sony in some of these games that have come out. And a lot of the Nintendo exclusivity in the past sort of hurt that as well. But I think that's exactly it. It's a revolution, because now I agree. I think the Switch is very on par with what's here right now and what's to come. Because, I mean, the PS5 is coming out pretty soon. I want to say Xbox is having another project under their belt where they're making something pretty new and interesting too. But people are still going to love the Switch. People are still going to continue to buy the Switch and play all the new and exciting games that come out on the Switch, because it is still up to par now, you know? And I agree with that as well. I love that new revolution for it.
Well, what do you have, Dominic, that you're thankful for?
Part of my little list of things was definitely the single player experience. And I think that we've already touched upon that pretty well. But honestly, the thing that came to my mind firstly was multiplayer experiences. And there's two sort of categories. There's obviously the high key multiplayer experiences where, you know, everything's pretty serious. Where a lot of competition comes into play, where a lot of tests of acute skills come into play. So like League of Legends and Apex Legends and you know, previously PUBG and Fortnite and stuff like that. But mainly, you know, all of us getting together and saying, hey, what are we going to do? What are we going to do for the next like month or two? You know what I mean? We never really planned it out like that, but a new game comes out and we're all like, let's hop on this shit, turn it up to 11, play it like hell. And then if you love it, keep playing it. If you're done with it, let's move on to something different if you want. You know, but getting into those serious modes where it's the summertime, you don't have to worry about literally anything else, but work if you have a job, and then playing video games because you totally have those, you know. But also the low-key multiplayer experiences, like casual stuff that we would do until like 3 a.m, right? Like Tabletop Simulator, Scriblio, Garry's Mod. Just those different experiences that we've had as a group doing these different multiplayer games. And just like some of our best insider experiences have come from or inside jokes have come from staying up until like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., just playing fucking online Pictionary, right? Or playing a puzzle piece inside of Tabletop Sim or something like that. You know, the multiplayer experiences were pretty huge for me. But also, I think attached to that, my other thing was live streaming. Being able to fully engage yourself into the experiences of somebody else that you would normally, if y'all were hanging out, would be enjoying in the same experience, in the same room, you know. But live streaming gives me the chance to check in on a lot of close friends of mine and a lot of people in our circle who are either living out of state and things like that. And you know, it doesn't feel like people are so apart anymore. I think live streaming was a good way to connect everybody, in a way for video games that it's kind of hard to do in other experiences. And those are probably the two main things I'm thankful for, is like being able to be in a multiplayer environment with people and just having fun in our own ways. And then, you know, when it's time to hang out and hang back and do something different, just sort of, you know, check in and see how people are doing on live streaming.
Yeah, like having that community where like it's not just unique to us, but it's the most potent for us among our group, and it's sure. Like it's really, it's something special to, because it's like you can't super do that with movies. Like you can watch a movie and someone else can watch a movie and then you can talk about it, I guess, but like when it comes to games, it's you can play something together, you can interact with each other and the game as a system. You can, and even in the live streaming example, it's like you can see somebody interacting with somebody or something.
Right.
And kind of, you know, it's more personal. You get to see someone you care about acting and doing things on their own. And so, you know, that's kind of a unique thing that games can do. And now being able to do it digitally is great. You know, something I like to see is, you know, we kind of, you know, at some point we were starting to, as the industry, we were starting to fall out of this like local co-op, like this couch co-op thing. We were starting to fall out of that in favor of online, but that kind of always was treated differently. It was always treated like, you know, a team deathmatch all the time. You know, everything was kind of like that. But now we're getting to this point where it's like we have that couch co-op design, but on top of that, it's, you know, we can use online to have that couch co-op experience. Like, what is that game? A Way Out? Mm-hmm. A Way Out is mm-hmm. that, it's that one where it's like the two guys escape from prison and all that stuff. And it's like designed to be co-op. And you can play it couch co-op. And it's designed as though it's an old school couch co-op game, but you can play it online. So I like that, you know, some games are starting to kind of bite at that a little bit, the long gone couch co-op experience.
Right. And I think what comes with that is it, you know, it's exactly what you were talking about. It's that, you know, we're able to, as opposed to a movie where you watch an experience and feel something from it, with video games you make your own experiences. And that's what's most important about all of these different ways in which we can connect with one another outside of just playing games together. It's that you know, you make your moments, and you make the moments that you love and that you remember forever. This is the more wholesome part of the discussion, but that's where it is. That's what I'm really most thankful for. It's that, like, all of these different experiences that we've made in video games have been because we've all put in the input for it, as opposed to we all watching a favorite show or watching a favorite movie that has swept the nation or something like that.
Cool. So, Zach, I'm pretty sure that I know what you're going to be thankful for. You're going to be thankful for these ads that we're going to break for real quick, and then we'll come actually.
You're right.
Then yeah, we'll right. actually come hey. To what you're
and,
to what you're
and he's
for.
Back with the transitions.
And he's back. All right. Yeah, we'll be right back.
I really thought you were about to wager a guess. I was like,
I did too.
I was like, how are you so sure?
I'm also trying to also clarify that, like, since it's kind of recorded, I don't want to, like, buy a robot and fuck
you. Were very clear about it, more clear okay. than any of us.
Cool. That was where I was.
You were very clear about, like, I'm upset that that's our main priority, and me and Devin were like, yeah, that's not very surprising, actually.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And we're back.
Hell yeah.
Zach, tell us something that you're thankful for so we can bash you.
Oh. Well, mine ties pretty similar to what Dee just said, and it's just the fact that we have a platform like Discord where we can all get together no matter where we're at, because in the past year, a lot of us have moved really far away.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we can all still talk and hang out is just amazing, I guess.
This is what I was going to be thankful for, though.
You stole it.
I was going to say, like, you know, thankful that, like, that games have basically kept our friend group the same for the past, like, 7 years now.
Yeah, honestly.
Like, ever since freshman year of college, whenever, like, we got those group of friends, and just being able to just stick with it because we're always playing games together. We're always on Discord. It started with what, GroupMe? We were using GroupMe chats for a while. Then we were doing Cursed Voice for a little bit. I think I had a dream that just last night that we returned to TeamSpeak.
Oh my God.
User has joined your channel. yeah. I mean, shit. Like it's so, because my parents, my, like, people, like, they'll call me and, like, oh yeah, you still talk to you know, you still talking to Joe and Dee and still talking to your friends. It's like I talk to them more than I talk to y'all.
Yeah, I talk to them
every day. Like, yeah, I talk with them every single day because we have a voice chat server that we always talk on. We're always shit posting with each other. We're always talking. I mean, we have, like, 30 different channels about whatever you want it to be about. So, like, if you want to talk about just Pokemon, you could do that. If you want to talk about politics, you could do that. If you want to talk about whatever it is, you can do it because we have a channel for it. And it's just, and everyone's on this Discord for a different reason, you know? Right, there's a lot of us that were just, like, the general friends, like, we're the core friend group. And then there's a lot of other people that we bring along that's like, hey, you know, we have a Magic the Gathering group. Do you want to just join and you could just kind of just chill in there because we're always posted in there and whatever. It's really interesting.
It is like one big, I call it, in the way that I've described it to some people that I've actually recently invited to our huge Discord, is that it's just one big oak tree of different friend circles and different ideas and different people's experiences that all stem from, like, maybe the first six or seven of us that, like, firstly progenied in, like, in high school, and then after high school, once everyone went to college, they had their own, like, intermediate friend circle. But it's like, that's exactly it. It's just that the way that we can connect with one another instantaneously, you know, our experiences with gaming may not have changed particularly or like very much, or maybe some of our experiences on in Discord may sort of be similar, but there are platforms where we know that as we grow as people, we can continue to discuss that in this environment. And that's also why I agree fully. Like, the idea that Discord can do that, or that some other places can do it, but Discord's just our little gig that we use. It's just really cool to stay connected with people while maintaining those cool little experiences.
Hell yeah.
I'm personally really flattered that we have, not only that we have enough people in the Discord, but also that we have, I guess, good enough content in the Discord that people lurk.
Yeah.
Oh my god. There are people who just silently listen. You know, yeah. I've had a few times where, like, our good buddy Cade, if you're listening, hello. I've had a few times where he would just see something and then message me later and be like, "Hey man, what's up? Like, I saw you said this, blah 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 blah." Yeah. It's like, he's lurking.
It's cool.
Yeah, Mark will do the same thing. Yeah, Mark will.
That's what I tell people.
I'll hang out with Mark and he'll be like, "Hey man, yeah, I saw on Discord that you know, this happened. So what's up with that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, like he just lurks most of the time." And you know, and not it's weird. Like, not everyone wants to just sit here and like we're always just fucking talking with each other. But and it is crazy that, like, I think I know most people on the Discord. There's definitely people that I have no idea who these people are, because we have 60 people.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
and that's after I removed some that have just never been online for
right
a while.
Yeah, like, we have 60 people on this goddamn
I was gonna say, like, one massive fucking oak tree of actually it's like 60 fucking people.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's, and granted, most of the content on this server is like from probably like 15 of us, 20 of us maybe. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, the rest of the people might jump in every now and then, might say something or whatever, but I mean, you know, this is home to all of them,
right? And I it's extremely personal for all of these different people, and it's cool. What's amazing to me is that we're not just some general forum that people jump on because of a particular Reddit community, right? It's like, there were initially, and I'm looking at our particular channel, it's like 18 of us, right? We're like originally, you know, through like one particular part of a friend group or another, it was like the first like maybe 18 of us that have all grown into like the core of the tree, right? But and then everyone else, all of the other 52 people, they're all people that it's all personal. It you know, I don't have to know exactly who these people are to know that they are a friend of a friend of a friend, and that level in itself, like, second generation friends in another way of saying it, it's super personal because everyone has their own experiences, and if people want to just lurk and do their own thing and like laugh at a particular meme at one point and then move on with their own thing, they can do that. It's not like everyone has to be super active here, and not everybody is active here. I think that's pretty much it. I think it's like the original like 18 of us are super active, and then everyone else is sort of like all contributing to that experience as well, and I think that's pretty neat as well. Yeah,
cool. So that's kind of it for what I am thankful for. I said,
like,
stories
hijacks Zach's thankfulness.
I think that, yeah,
because Zach stole it from me. Okay,
well, all I think right. That I think that in another
Zach, you say pick something else. You have to pick something else.
Yeah, no. You can't be thankful for this. You have to be thankful for something different, Zach.
Yeah, because you know what? We can't have the same thing. All right. I'm thankful for Zach.
Yeah, well, I think we're all thankful for Zach.
I'm thankful that like, I don't know, this podcast is pretty cool that we get to do this.
Yeah, fucking right.
And you know, people every now and then will listen to it, and that's exciting. Because sometimes we will ramble on about the most inane things. I was about to say innate. I'm like, it's not that.
Inert. Yeah, cyber trucks and robots that you can fuck are not innate.
Yeah, those are. That's definitely very artificial. and you know, fabricated. No, it's like the, I guess this podcast is like my third thing to be, well, my 2.5 thing, because Zach and I shared that second, that, you know.
Yeah. Never gonna let it go.
No. I'm not gonna let it go. This podcast is definitely like, I mean, just because we will fucking just sit and chat and just talk about shit, and I'm like, why are we not recording this just for fun?
Yeah,
because that's all really this is just for fun.
Yeah. Well, what's amazing to me is that talking about this podcast, it's something that we know that we can do for fun, but now that all that we needed to really do is just push the envelope just a little bit in terms of like our quote-unquote production, and we can now produce something that people like, you know, even if it's just like a couple, like a small handful of concurrent listeners. It's like the ability to take what we can sort of do naturally, because conversation is like, it's a very natural and human thing. Everybody talks, everybody has a conversation, but for our ability to just refine it a little bit, structure it, record it, edit it, and then produce it, even in our own particular little production, it's pretty amazing to me. And whenever I do talk about a podcast to somebody, you know, outside of, you know, our gaming circle or outside of our massive oak tree of friends, they're like, oh, what's it about? And it's like, well, it's about video games and different things like that. And then they get like super into it. And I remember just talking to like one or two people about the show. And then like over the weekend passes and they come back and they're like, oh, dude, I listened to your first episode and I'm like in love with it. And I'm like, wait, you're what? like we're in what? and it's kind of surreal for me because it's just sort of the same. It's exactly what Devin was saying. It's the same things that we've been doing for so long, and we're just like, you know what? Why don't we just record and produce it? And it also teaches people to have like to structure their ideas a little bit more. I know just for me at least, like. Because we can just talk about how, like, oh, well, this game sucks and it's garbage. But it's like, well, once you have an analytical spin on it, and once you put a little bit more, like, thought and effort into what you're talking about, then it becomes a pretty cool production, even if you're not recording it.
Yeah, because it's just, like, thinking back on, like, the Elder Scrolls episodes when I really, like, griped on Skyrim and everything like that, of just, like, the things that I don't like about it. Those are all things that I've said before, and, like, and being able to just kind of put it out there, it's like, you know, the thing that I think is plaguing games, or at least plaguing Bethesda a lot, and just being able to kind of like, you know, air my grievances is nice.
But it's also something that we do pretty intentionally. Like, we're not, you know, it's not like you're saying, oh, this game just sucks, and it's like, it's this and that and the other. It's like, we are able to formulate particularly sound arguments about what's going on. And we've even clarified, you know, it's not like we're just bashing on the game because we all love it. And it's not like we're bashing on the industry because we love the industry. It's just that there are things about it that, though we love it, it does have an objective fallback. And it's not
because we love it. There are things that we criticize.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just
at times.
Yeah,
but usually.
Yeah, I think just kind of going back a little bit, I think that we're all thankful for the same sort of main things. You know, we're all thankful for, of course, you know, we have this platform where we can continue to be so connected to each other, in real time. We are also super thankful of the ability to, in just about real time, project all of our thoughts into one particular format and, you know, produce it how we do, and it's well received by other people. And I think that, just in summary, I think we're also all pretty thankful of the same experiences that we're able to have in a single player and multiplayer experience. So I think that we all sort of share a lot of these very similar things that we're thankful for, but, you know, we all have our own spin on what about it makes it interesting, and I'm sure that other people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like for the podcast, it's like I'm really happy with, you know, whatever amount of people. It's like, I don't know, like at most like 5 to 8 people or something listen, aside from us. And it's like, I always heard, like, you hear from like really, really big creators, they're like, yeah, you know, I have like hundreds of thousands of people who watch my stuff and blah, blah, blah. But like 1,000's a lot. And I would watch that and be like, no, 1,000's not a lot. 100,000's a lot. Like 1,000 is not a lot. And meanwhile, we're making shit, it's like, we have 5 people. Holy shit.
Yeah, right. Right. It's super localized and it's amazing. And I'm looking through the analytics because I think we've talked about it on previous episodes. And I'm certain we did make a post about it once or twice, but we have listeners. It's like 91% is the United States, but then we also have people from Australia, Germany, Sweden, Canada, the United Kingdom, and South Africa that shout out to all you motherfuckers across the planet that have listened to us. And it's like, even if you checked in for 5 minutes and was like, yeah, these people are just stupid fucking Americans, get out of here, and you know, backed out, it's like people literally across the world, whether it's one person or 5 people, have made an intentional effort to click on whatever it is that we do, listen in, and either opt in or opt out. Like, that's so surreal to me. And however many concurrent listeners we have or not, it's that, like, it's the fact that people have made an effort to hear what we have to say, and we've made an effort to structure what we have to say too. I think that that's a very, very unique experience. And exactly what you were talking about, Kev, like, one of the biggest examples for me is Markiplier, you know, has a little over like, what, 22 million subscribers or some shit like that.
Yeah, some absurd number in the tens of millions.
But is still able to connect on a very, very individual level with some of these fans. And it's insane, man. Like, the scale of it is unlike anything that I can perceive. You know, and I can equate it to sort of what we have right now, you know, and it's that there are particular podcasts out there, like, we've talked with 1 or 2 different podcasting groups, once or twice, specifically Screen Looking Podcast, shout out to our fucking boys. Screen Looking Podcast has been really sweet to us, and we've been pretty sweet to them. It's just that, like, now we're in a position where other entities and other people and other groups of people are listening in and responding, and we're a small part of this little podcasting community now, and I think that that's pretty fucking surreal as well. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Like, just like, I've always had like the part of my brain that is, you know, wanting and, you know, talented at doing this specific thing of like arguing my point and everything. Mm-hmm. I've always had that and that like drive to do it, but like never had an outlet for it. I was always like afraid to pull the trigger and make something. Because what I always did was I would always do this thing where I try to figure it out 100% before starting. And we did the total opposite for this podcast. We did absolutely the opposite thing. We just said, we want to do it. All right, cool. What's it about? It's about video games. All right, this Saturday, we're recording something, you know, like,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
how we did it. And, you know, it's been a learning process. And like, you know, like, especially for me with like the technical aspect of editing, you know, it's like, I'm figuring it out as I go. I've never done it before, but it's like, that's what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful that we just kind of started making something, you know, and sure. we just went in and it's like, all right, this can improve, this can improve, this can improve. And so like that approach is something I'm happy about as well.
For sure. And I mean, I think that we can, I think it's been a really, really cool process to learn also how to articulate all of our different opinions and arguments into one thing. And then, you know, produce it from there, because we have relatively similar ideas about particular things in a lot of different franchises, but you know, there are games that we have openly talked about on the show that like like, Kevin, I know you fucking hate The Last of Us. I love The Last of Us. You know what I mean? It's just like, we have, and that's the thing. It's just like, to be able to learn how to articulate a thorough and thoughtful argument, as opposed to just saying, these games suck. Let's talk about why they suck. Or these games are great. Let's talk about why everyone thinks it's great. It's a personal articulation of what it is that a lot of people are talking about, and I think that's just a part of the podcasting experience.
Yeah, to kind of foreshadow a little bit, like, we're intending on doing a Last of Us episode one day. I'm gonna do my due diligence. I'm gonna play the game fully. You know, I'm gonna borrow it from my brother. I'm gonna play it fully, beginning to end. Because last time I played it, I quit like partway through because I fucking hated it. I'm going to do my due diligence and play the whole game and articulate why I don't like it, you know? And, you know, there are things about that game that I like, and I will give it credit for those things, but I'm going to articulate why I fucking hate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What else are we thankful for, though? who do we not hate? Does anyone else have anything, any other shit they want to add?
Well, I had one other thing. I'm happy about this movement in games where, you know, over the past several years, this is kind of the bad part. We, you know, DLC and then microtransactions and then loot boxes and just fucking garbage business tactics, essentially. And now we're getting to this point. We're starting to get over the hill with that. And we're starting to have this, like, game studios, like, hey, let's just make a fucking game and see if it sticks, you know, like, let's just make a product that is a product, you know, that's like starting to happen a little more, and game studios are starting to realize that it actually kind of works, you know? So, you know, like, not that it's fully there, but, you know, Borderlands 3 did a pretty good job, at least, like, removing loot boxes. Like, they don't have loot boxes. They have some microtransactions, but it's all cosmetic, and you know, it's like, okay, that's a step in the right direction. You know, we have God of War, the kind of reboot, and it's like, yeah, it's mostly just a game. There's not really much extra to pay for in that game. It's just a fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
Jedi Fallen Order is the most recent one. It's like they just made a fucking game. And so, you know, I like that we're kind of straying back to that as a fucking business strategy.
Well, I think what came from that was something that I wanted to talk about with God of War, for just remembering what we were talking about in the beginning. God of War came out at around the time where a lot of people were bringing to the conversation that single player games were dying, and
of course they're not.
Well, yeah, obviously no. But I think that God of War, it was sort of around that beginning of very strong counter arguments to that idea, because a lot of people had the opinion that, like, oh, you know, multiplayer is going to be the next thing, and it's like, well, to clarify, VR is going to be the next thing, and then AR, and then we're just going to be video games, right? It's like singularity, like, but I think what I love about this industry is that we have debunked the idea that a particular genre or a particular way of playing the game or a particular way of experiencing a particular part of a game is going to be the next thing. You know, multiplayer games are not the next thing. Single player games are not the next thing. I think further the point is that single player games are never going to die. You know, because we've had fucking colossal single player experiences now. God of War was probably, in my opinion, God of War was the first counter argument around its time. And of course, we've had, like, you know, Detroit Become Human. We've had Jedi Fallen Order, you know, the new Legend of Zelda, Death Stranding. So many of these very, very thoughtful experiences while also having amazing multiplayer experiences like Apex Legends and, you know, some others, you know. That's the point. It's that, like, you know, no genre is going to really die. And because of that, we're always going to have particular ways to enjoy particular experiences in really, really cool ways. And that's what I love about our sort of next movement in video games.
I think it's not necessarily that, like, oh, this is the next big thing. I think the next big thing is the next good game, period. And that's always going to be what it is. And then there's always going to be a deluge of people like, oh, this is the next big thing, so let's do this. And I mean, that's just what people get caught up in. It was just like the Battle Royale craze of Battle Royales are the next big, which, I mean, they were the next big thing. But
not
basically
anymore.
I mean, whenever like Fortnite came out, and it's like, okay, this is like basically the peak of what you can get for a Battle Royale game. So, and you know, you have your other, PUBG still goes on. I think H1Z1 still goes on as well. You have Apex Legends, of course, the Call of Duty one. There's a few of them that like they have their own little community, but nothing's gonna get to Fortnite levels again. You just have games like that, like Breath of the Wild is kind of like a good staple of a good, was it staple stunt? I don't know what I'm trying to say, but it's like a good marker for like open world experiences and open world games, and but it also shows the flaws in open world games a lot, though.
Mm-hmm.
In the purely, you know, here's your sandbox and here's, because I mean, there for a lot of Breath of the Wild, it is samey. I mean, like with all the shrines and whatnot, but we'll get to Breath of the Wild at a later date. But no, I just think like the next big thing is the next good game. Like right now, we have really good games coming out. We had Outer Worlds, we have Jedi Fallen Order, Pokemon, Luigi's Mansion, like just good solid games that you're not gonna pinpoint and say this is the next big thing. Because it's just a good game, period.
Right. And I totally agree with that. The only minor exception is that I am looking forward to the next idea of how people are going to do stranding games. Like, I know Kojima was trying to start a sort of new genre with Death Stranding, in that like your single player experience, if you want it to, can be directly influenced by other players in a multiplayer experience. And like the idea of asymmetrical multiplayer, or asynchronous multiplayer, I'm excited for that, because not a lot of people are doing that yet. I think that that's,
I mean,
it's a pretty cool innovation.
Dark Souls.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of stupid that it's been evolving. It's really stupid that that Kojima was able to like, or no, he's put in a copyright for Strand games, for like the Strand system of multiplayer games, asynchronous multiplayer. It's like okay, you took Dark Souls multiplayer and you added a little bit more to it, but that is basically what, I mean, you can leave messages, you can it's like you can give people Estus and stuff like that. Like there are ways that you can affect other people's game while not even being in their game at all. It's a thing that's been around for a while, and I don't see how it's Kojima's kind of riding his high horse of like, this is the first Strand game, this is Strand gameplay.
Well,
he did a natural evolution of it, but
yeah,
it's
he
not
did
an
na-
entirely
it's,
new. It's just like everything. We build on the shoulders of giants, you know. It's not totally his unique idea, but he did like take it to the logical next step, and it's like cool for doing that. But it's not completely your idea.
Yeah, and I can agree with that. You know, I don't think he should reserve that for himself. I do think that he sort of did perfect or brought it closer to a perfected state of asynchronous multiplayer, because Dark Souls or From Software games did it pretty well. And exactly as you said, Kevin, I think that he did take it to a next logical step. But I think he did it in a really, really brilliant way for the type of game that Death Stranding is. Because for the for the next types of games that are designed to come out like that, like I think that he really polished that idea of asynchronous multiplayer. Maybe not incepted it, obviously, but I think that he definitely brought it to another stage closer to perfection. And that's, I mean, we can agree to disagree on it, but I think that that is something that, I mean, it's pretty substantial in my opinion. You know, it's something that he's perfecting. Should he take full ownership of it? No. But is it something that he's credited with sort of starting? In terms of like moving it into a new direction, I think so, because Dark Souls multiplayer has always been kind of samey, and this is just a different take on it. And I think that if people start to do the next different take similar to Death Stranding, I think he can get some credit there, but definitely not all of it. I can agree with that.
Yeah, like the previous incarnation of this was, you know, it's like your Dark Souls style, and no one really innovated. Like, okay, so it's like Dark Souls, like, almost entirely came up with that idea. There might have been some obscure examples before it, but it's the one that, like, really made it stick. And really, right. It was Demon's Souls, but same lead developer.
Yeah.
But it's, like, limited. It's, you can leave messages, you know, there are certain, like, events, like Devin mentioned with the Estus, there are limited things that can happen. And it's, like I said, it's kind of limited, but it worked for the game. That's all those games needed. In a more open-ended sort of game, like Death Stranding, like the way the world is formatted, from what I've seen, is it works better with this sort of, like you can leave, what is it, like ladders or whatever, you can leave ladders around for other people and stuff, and it's like, oh, okay, and then you can like rate the ladder on like how well-placed it was and stuff, and then that'll make it pop up in more people's places. That's based on the same, like, idea of leaving a message and people rate the message, but it has more of an impact, you know. Like I said, it's the logical next step. But yeah, you know, good on Miyazaki for really like formalizing that base idea, and good on Kojima for bringing it to its next level, and then good on whoever is next to bring it to its next level.
Right, and that's what I liked most, was that the difference was that in this setting, you know, in everyone's game, the river is there and you can cross the river and you have to walk through it initially, right? Or in this case, you have the same river, but in your playthrough somebody built a bridge over it, in your game somebody put a ladder across it. Like, that's the change that I was that I liked about it.
Yeah, it has a more mechanical and direct impact on your gameplay, rather than you know, a message and it's like, oh, now I know a piece of information, you know. It's right. More like tangible. It's like, oh, there, someone was here, and I feel like that sense of connection. And that's what Kojima was really going for with Death Stranding, is like, he was like talking really fucking obscure in the development cycle, like, oh, it's about, you know, connections, and like the first thing man made was a weapon, and now the second thing he made was a rope, and I'm gonna tie people together and connections and blah blah.
Yeah.
I don't think he really knows how to fucking articulate his thoughts, which is why he's an artist. That's like typically how artists are, is I don't know how to say what is in my head, so I'm just gonna make it, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had that idea of like, I'm gonna tie people together, and I think that was a neat way of doing that, because like, whoever the hell, I don't know who left that ladder, but I feel connected to them. Like, oh, wow, they directly affected my experience with this game by doing this, you know?
Yeah.
And like this, and I can directly affect other people. And it's kind of like how I hear Journey works, where it's like, you can see people and like vaguely interact with them, but like, you know, it just kind of makes you feel connected to these other adventures that are happening in tandem with you. And this has like a direct, like, oh, this guy helped me out, you know, and let me help out other people, you know. So it's even more of a direct sort of connection to other people.
Sure. I will say, though, Death Stranding, in my experience, still can't do what Dark Souls did. And that is to really personalize your interactive experience. What with the whole leaving signs that actually, you know, I keep flashing back to the tri-tongue butthole message, and it's just like that will never be. You can't replicate that anywhere else. Like that is a pure Dark Souls experience.
Amazing chest ahead.
There's some like
amazing chest ahead. Yeah,
yeah. With Dark Souls, it's very like it's different because like in Death Stranding, it's almost like you can only help people, right? By and large, you can only help people. But in Dark Souls, you can fucking lie to people and you can invade them and you can kill them. You know, like you have the whole gradient of options. So it's just like a totally different take on it, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that diversity is really interesting in and of itself.
Yeah.
Closing thoughts. Yeah. Let's try to wrap this up.
Yeah. I wanted to say with that in mind, I'm thankful in that sense of that, you know, everyone's experiences in these particular styles of games can overlap and can like affect one another in that way. I'm thankful for that next step, which I think is what we like began to say, but then just like jumped down the fucking rabbit hole about it. But yeah, I think that the summary of that is, you know, intimately personal experiences with the player and the game can now be influenced by multiple other connections between a person and their game. So there we are.
Cool. And one last thing, I'm thankful for you listeners, wherever you are. Thank you for listening, obviously. Please do check out our social medias. Dominic, if you want to tell them where they can find us.
Absolutely. And it's true. We are very thankful of you guys. If you want to sort of see more updates or actually reach out to us directly, you may do so at our Twitter and Instagram. Our Twitter's tombstone_pod. Instagram's tombstone_podcast. If you're not sure where to go, and if you're somehow magically listening to this and you don't know where you are, we are on Anchor, which is anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast, but we're also on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, which is where you can leave a review. That'd be pretty swell. And we're also on the other ones, you know, like Breaker, Radio Public, Overcast, and hopefully more in the future. But if you'd like to leave us donations, you know, like we say, it's never really expected of you as listeners, but if you want to go that extra mile and show us some more love, we appreciate that as well. It's on our support page, which is anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast/support. And in the future, we'll also do some Twitch streaming and maybe even some Mixer streaming as well. You can probably reach us there at tombstone_podcast. I believe that it's just going to be the same throughout, but yeah, you can definitely, you know, send us DMs, send us messagings and things like that. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you're thankful for as well. And even moving forward, let us know what you'd like to see in the future, because we have a lot of stuff in our little mixed bag of conversations. So let us know what you'd like to hear in the future, and we'll do our best to satisfy that for you.
And thank you very much. We will be back again next week with another beautiful episode. So, farewell.
That's a wrap. Dude, right. I gotta piss. Fuck!
Wait, can we end sync? Can we end sync real quick?
Yeah. Clap. All right.
3, 2, 1.
All right, I'm out of here. Fuck it. Oh, my God. I'm out.